Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil. Alexis en el descuento ha marcado el Arsenal, como viene siendo habitual esta temporada. Gol de Alexis, 1-0 Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to the very first Arscast Extra of 2015. Happy New Year to you, James.
Happy New Year to you. Do you have a good one?
Yes.
Well, there we go.
There's no point reliving past glories, though.
No, indeed. None of that.
Yeah.
Just get on with it. Bring on the future.
2015, from a football point of view, didn't necessarily get off to the best start, but I think we'll come back to that game, will we? The Southampton game.
Okay.
And we can start with yesterday. In the FA Cup and against Hull, and there was worry, I guess, after what happened against Southampton, and worry that, you know, Hull would be out for revenge after what happened in the final. But Steve Bruce made a lot of changes to his side, which was quite good, because the changes that we made to our side didn't seem to affect us as badly as they might have.
No, I think they made 10, didn't they? And you did wonder, going into the game with them being quite so heavily in the relegation mire, how much of a priority this would be for them. And I think they'll be disappointed with their performance, really. You know, even with the players they had, they didn't really put us in under any sustained pressure, did they?
No, I mean, a lot of the ball in the second half, which was a little bit worrying, because it didn't seem as if we were able to do anything about it for maybe 15 minutes. They passed it around quite nicely. Now, they didn't do an awful lot with it, but at the same time, you're looking for us to be a bit more, you know,
proactive.
Yes,
really.
Exactly. But I thought, you know, first half in particular was a good performance from us. And maybe the fact that we did have so many changes in the team just added a little bit of freshness to the performance.
Yeah, I guess so. And there's a kind of frisson that you get when people are trying to make an impression and, you know, win a place in the side potentially. And there was a few out there doing that. I thought it was an interesting team we picked. And I thought there was quite a lot of positives, really, all through the side. And so I think Arsene Wenger will be very satisfied. I mean, job done as far as he's concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was one of those games, though, wasn't it? It's a job done. We've just got to get this one won. Mm. And let's not worry too much about how it's done. I mean, I think you're right, there were some positives. But at the same time, you wouldn't want to go overboard. As you said last week, it's hard to think that we've turned any kind of a corner, particularly as we tend to be, you know, a bit up and down. But, okay, so let's touch on some of the things that happened. Alexis, the manager said beforehand that, you know, he gave him the chance to rest if he wanted to have a rest. And the player said, nah, I want to play. It must be hugely difficult as a manager to try and leave him out, because he has such an impact on the team in the way that they play. And obviously he's got end product, which a lot of the players around him don't seem to have at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I thought he would get a rest over this Christmas period. I thought it might come against QPR. When it didn't come then, I thought it might come against Hull. But he's played every game, and you have to say, he hasn't shown any great signs of fatigue. He's still been the Alexis that we've known all season long. And the stories that you hear from the training ground about the level of intensity he puts into every single session, you know, people try and tell him to take it easy, and he just won't listen. The guy's clearly keen to play himself, feels he can. And as Arsene Wenger said after the game yesterday, you know, when people are in that kind of rich vein of form, you do understand the temptation to make the most of it.
Mm.
However, I can't be alone in worrying that it's all going to go horribly wrong at some point.
Well, I mean, that's a certain amount of fatalism there, isn't it? Because,
yeah,
you know, it's because of how important he is to the team.
And what happens to our players traditionally as well, I suppose?
Well, yeah, that too. But, I mean, there are other players who play week in, week out, every game, almost every minute for their clubs. And, you know, we don't necessarily, you know, pay a great deal of attention to that. But I think you're right. The injury situation at Arsenal just makes us assume that at some point he's going to pick up an injury. But there's a certain amount of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because if you don't play Alexis and we don't get a result, why are you not playing your best player? And if you do play him and you still get a result, there are people going, well, you know, you got to rest him at some point. So it's hard to find the balance, isn't it? I mean, yeah, you can easily say, yes, we should rest him, but when and how? That's the question.
Well, that's a great point. And I think it was made particularly difficult for Arsene Wenger by the absence of Giroud and Welbeck, which I don't think he would have anticipated necessarily at this period.
Yeah.
You know, he lost Giroud to that silly suspension and then a knock for Welbeck. So in some ways, his hand was slightly forced. The other thing is that when Alexis inevitably does pick up an injury, and touch wood, it's not a serious one, people will point to him not being rested, but he might just get a kick on the knee. You know, it could be anything. It could be random. It could be nothing to do with the number of games he's played.
Of course, yeah.
So it is one of those sort of difficult to weigh up things. But, I mean, the form he's in, he doesn't show any great sign of tiring. And I think, you know, if Arsenal have got the results, would they have got them without him? We'll never know. But the way he's carried the team this season, you do feel that in some ways playing him might be something of a necessity.
Mm. The first time that we've seen Alexis and Theo Walcott in the side together, the views on Theo's performance pretty mixed. Mm. He got a big round of applause, but I wasn't sure that he played that well, to be honest with you. And he's that kind of a player, I think, that when he's not fit and when he's not 100%, and even when he is 100% sometimes, that, you know, there are lots of flaws to Theo's game. And they become very apparent when he's off the pace. We saw that yesterday, that a couple of touches were just wrong, you know. And that comes down to rustiness as well. I mean, I'm not suggesting that he should be firing on all cylinders in his first start back after 12 months. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, he's an odd sort of a player, isn't he? There was some really nice movement in the final third, which is something that we've been missing a bit, because Alexis, we know, likes to drop deep. And for us then to try and get men in behind the defence is difficult. And some of Theo's runs were very good. I think Coquelin found him in the second half. There was one in the first half where he made a run. Coquelin nearly found him again. So that part of the game was good, but the rest of it, a bit iffy. And then, you know, are we being hypercritical because it's his first game back after 12 months?
I think that the flaws in Theo Walcott's game that we saw yesterday, have they not kind of always been there?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think, is there not a slight case of, if there's anyone surprised at that, is it that thing where someone's out for injury and they slightly improve during their absence, and then they come back and you remember, oh, yeah, no, they do that. and I think that there's a touch of that with Theo. You know, I think technically he's never really been quite at the level of some of our other players in terms of his ability on the ball. I think what he brings, as you say, is his movement off it. You know, we've got a lot of players who are capable of playing good through balls. Coquelin, you mentioned. I thought Santi Cazorla did that very, very well yesterday. Tomasz Rosicki. And what Theo Walcott has is real speed, best utilised, to be honest, when he hasn't got the ball at his feet, running in behind. And he didn't have the finishing touch yesterday. But I think that finishing is so related to confidence, and confidence is something he can only really get by playing more games, you know, riding more tackles and scoring a couple of goals. And I think that'll come. I thought, on the whole, personally, I thought it was encouraging. I think he'll be a great option for us and bring something a little bit different to what we already have. So also, potentially, I think for a defence, facing both the speed of him and Alexis is an absolute nightmare.
Mm. He's not, let's say, particularly inclined defensively, Theo Walcott.
I would say not at all. I'd say that's a big hole in his game.
You think, moving off very slightly onto another contentious enough issue that went down this week, do you think that the decision to let Lucas Podolski go on loan was informed by Arsene Wenger's desire to get Theo Walcott back into the team, right, to make space for him, because Alexis has been playing from the right with Giroud or Welbeck in the centre, or, you know, he's been doing that quite a lot. So Walcott's position is on the right-hand side. Mm. Do you think there was an element of not just what happened with Podolski and his own frustration, but the desire to create space in the squad for Walcott, and also given that Podolski's defensive work was not his best quality, an admission that he can't really keep two of those players in the squad?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think that, you know, that inevitably people will ask about Podolski and say, why now? And I think that, rightly or wrongly, the explanation is probably that the player pushed for the move. If you look at how quickly it's happened, the fact that Arsene Wenger talked about his frustration after the game yesterday, the player's sense of frustration at not playing games, I think that there was pressure, certainly, from the playing side for him to go. As for whether or not Walcott is the reason, I'm not sure. I mean, in some ways, I think Danny Welbeck killed Podolski's Arsenal career, simply because he can play centre-forward in a way that Podolski can't, and he's ended up playing left-wing, which is the position Podolski would most likely be in where you're getting games. Mm. So I think Welbeck's arrival, his versatility, the fact that he wasn't a pure centre-forward, is probably the thing that's really pushed Podolski out the door. Mm. I think the thing on Walcott's interesting, because I know, it's jumping slightly ahead to questions, but I was talking on Twitter last night to at Jordan Harper, and he was saying, implying really, that Walcott sort of gets away with more than Podolski would in terms of his defensive effort. You know, Podolski was so heavily criticised for not tracking back, but does Walcott really offer anything more? Do you think there's something in that?
I think there's a certain element of clean-cut, blue-eyed boy to Theo, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know what colour his eyes are, but, you know, just saying sure. That as a thing. You know, I think he does, because I don't think you can have watched Theo Walcott over the last however many years he's been at Arsenal, 8 years now, something like that, and not see that there are big deficiencies in his game. But the weird thing about Walcott is that he can be having an absolute stinker and get you a goal, and get you another goal, and he provides, or was the only one in the squad for a while who could provide that outlet of pace that we needed. He's not the only player who can do that now. So there's probably a bit more pressure on him to deliver. But yeah, I mean, I do think he's a popular guy. And, you know, he's not an offensive character or a really divisive character in terms of his personality or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's an element of favourite players. I think we're all guilty of that individually and also collectively, of letting favourite players away with things that people who are under the microscope, for example, just aren't allowed any kind of mistake whatsoever. That there's forgiveness for some but not for others. And that, you know, sometimes the tide turns against a player and that's it. There's no way back. We've seen that in the past. That hasn't happened with Theo because maybe the problems that he has aren't not as damaging, let's say, as if it was a defender that had the flaws to his game. An attacker that fluffs his lines might cost you a goal-scoring chance, but a defender that does that might cost you a goal, or a goalkeeper, for example, will cost you a goal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's early days to draw any conclusions as to Theo and his performance from yesterday, but, you know, Andrew Allen was pointing out to me that an interview that he did with Arsenal.com before the game, and his quote was, "I'm not expecting too much from these games early on. It'll be blowing the cobwebs away, and it'll be good to be out playing with my mates again because I've missed it all." I mean, that's not...
Maybe it's like that's from one of his books.
Yeah, exactly.
TJ and the big match, or whatever.
Yeah, TJ and the I'm back from injury. We'll see what happens.
And the anterior ligament cruciate injury.
Yeah, but you know, it's not like I'm dying to get back. I'm determined to get out there and, you know, make a real impact. You know, there's a very difference in personality between, let's say, him and Alexis. You know, and that maybe that's an unfair comparison as well. But I think perhaps that quote sums up Theo. He's quite vanilla, a bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Magnolia, you know.
Yeah.
He's not bright and colourful. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, I thought there were some encouraging signs, but, you know, he's got to really start making an impact now. He's been out for 12 months. And, you know, his comeback was when? About 2 months ago, though.
October?
Yeah, October. You know, he was back and made a couple of substitute appearances and then picked up that groin injury, so he's been out again. So, you know, as there was a time where his skills were unique at Arsenal. You know, his pace was unique and his finishing perhaps was, you know, in around the box. So that ability to get you a goal out of nothing, there weren't too many players in the squad who could do that. But we've got other players now who can do that. So he's not necessarily as protected a species as he was.
Well, it's an interesting time, of course, because I think, what are we, 18 months from the end of his contract?
So yeah.
Negotiations are due, really, aren't they?
They certainly are. Let's just go back very briefly to the Podolski thing. Timing a bit odd, but I, you know, it's hard to escape the conclusion that he really, really pushed for the move. I know there was the story in the Mirror by John Cross, which said he stormed out of training. And then, of course, Podolski responded on Instagram to shoot that down. But I don't know.
I've been wondering if there's a bit, if there is something to that.
Yeah,
though.
I mean, I have too, because, you know, John, whether you like what he does or doesn't, is pretty well connected within the club. You might question whether the information was given to him in good faith, perhaps. Could it be a Machiavellian thing where somebody gave him some information to cushion the blow of his departure from an Arsenal point of view, that if people thought he had been kicking up? But I think it's been obvious that he wants to go for a long time. He's every single interlull he's been saying, well, I'm not happy about not playing, we'll see what happens in January, you know, and that's happened consistently, what, 3-4 times this season? So yeah. I imagine behind the scenes he's been pushing for a move himself.
Yeah, there was a moment in one of the press conferences recently where Arsene Wenger, someone put it to him, you know, of course, Lucas Podolski would be keen to explore the possibility of this Inter Milan move, and he sort of puffed and sighed and said, of course, in a way that said to me, tell me about it, it's been a nightmare. I mean, you know, you'd have to be careful inferring too much, but my strong sense, and also this, you know, the talk of a knock, but now he's been, you know, Inter Milan are saying that he's ready to train with them straight away. It's clear that there were things going on in the background, I think.
But, I mean, we, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Standard practice, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you can be sure that if we want to sign a player from a club this January... sorry, I just want to have a little laugh at that. But if that was the case, the player in question would, at his own club, probably do much the same as Podolski did to move away from Arsenal.
Of course. Of course. It's unfortunately, it's just the way it works now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, I mean, he's clever enough to have left in a way that has left him endeared to the vast majority, because he seemed like a really nice guy who could really hit a ball very hard.
Very, very hard, yeah. And I see he's straight away set about endearing himself with the Inter Milan fans as well. He turned up nearly in full kit, didn't he?
Yeah.
all the accessories.
Yeah, he knows how to play the game.
Definitely. He's a bit like Theo, actually, to be honest, in that respect. He's a very good public image. But are you worried about it? Do you think it will cost us at all?
I don't know. That might be a question. I think we might have that for after the break, we'll hang on to that one. Let's touch very briefly on what happened on New Year's Day, Southampton.
Yeah.
Disappointing performance, punctuated by mistakes. And it was the mistakes that cost us, really. That, rather than, you can look at that team and say, that's not the best looking Arsenal team I've ever seen in my life, but individual errors more than anything else were what cost us. And that was that's been a long, difficult habit for us to get out of.
Yeah, because this was, of course, the famous first choice back five for the first time this season, I think we saw the first choice defence and Wojciech Szczesny together. But as you say, individual errors. The goalkeeper, of course, came under a lot of scrutiny, but I think Lauren Koscielny had a very difficult day as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, I sort of came away wondering, was it kind of a game too far? You know, was this a squad that had too stretched, basically suffering from a very intense Christmas period and a difficult fixture? Was this one that we just didn't have in us? I don't know. I felt like we were slightly on our last legs in that particular match, and that fatigue may have led directly to those mistakes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how fatigued a goalkeeper can be, though.
Fair point, yeah.
You know, Koscielny, you know, he was good against, was it West Ham? He played
against West Ham, yeah.
Played against West Ham, he was good, but you wonder then, given that he was on the bench yesterday, whether or not he's really ready to be playing.
Certainly, with that kind of regularity.
Yeah.
But Szczesny, yeah, I mean, I think that was... That's a good point. Obviously, you know, people talk about the mental strain, but I think that's not really a valid point. I think the errors that he made were strange, particularly the second one. You know, you almost wonder if he doesn't make the first one, does he make the second one? Is that kind of born out of that panic and that need to atone for an error, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to say, as dodgy as Szczesny was for the first goal, I thought Koscielny was just as dodgy.
Yeah, me too. Definitely.
He really, really shouldn't have moved away from the player. So there, you know, it was a collective load of old bollocks, really, in that one. All right, well, look, what we're going to do is take a short break, and then we'll come back with some questions in part two. Welcome back to this week's Arsecast Extra. As always, this is the time where we answer your questions sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arseblog using the hashtag Arsecast Extra. First question today, James, comes from Matt Cowdock.
Okay.
And he says, despite not having much to do yesterday, would either of you start Ospina on Saturday?
Ah, okay. I thought this probably would crop up, obviously, in the light of Szczesny's Southampton performance. I think Ospina's probably the only person who's a bit annoyed that Hull didn't offer more, because he barely had a thing to do, did he, against them? He probably would have liked the opportunity to make a couple of, you know...
Showy saves.
Showy saves, yeah, which we know he's got in the locker from the World Cup. I personally would stick with Szczesny, and there's a few reasons... The main one is obviously that it's Stoke, and for a player who's not hugely experienced in English football and who's barely 6 foot as well, it's worth mentioning, I think that would be a difficult game to throw him in. If it goes their way a bit and they get a few set pieces, I think potentially that could incur some risk. And I think that Wojciech Szczesny, it's important to remember, as poor as he was at Southampton, he was excellent at West Ham. And showed a real ability to deal with those kinds of aerial balls. So I'd be keen to reintroduce him. I think, you know, just taking the time out of missing the FA Cup game might have done something for his concentration levels. And Ospina didn't do anything wrong, so that will have, you know, created a little bit of pressure, but I can't see that he did enough to necessarily take up the spot in the long term. What about you?
Yeah, I need to see more of Ospina before I'd be confident about throwing him in against against Stoke. And I think what we'll probably see from Stoke are similar tactics to West Ham, in that they will get the ball forward into the box with crosses, set pieces. And I think Szczesny was really decisive against West Ham, set the tone for his performance early on by coming. And I think perhaps maybe goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is that maybe Szczesny's personality doesn't allow him to get away with certain things. People, rightly or wrongly, think he's a cocky kind of a guy. Mm-hmm. I think he's obviously got a lot of self-confidence. But I think that rubs some people up the wrong way, so that when he makes a mistake, it's highlighted. I think people have forgotten very quickly what a good goalkeeper he was last season. that he's still only 24 years of age, that a lot of work has gone into him to make him the Arsenal number one. He's played, I don't know how many games. He's had some stinkers, but then lots of young goalkeepers do. Now, I get that there are concerns about his development, that you'd really like to see him kick on this season and become a dominant keeper, perhaps like De Gea is. They're more or less the same age, and people are looking at De Gea and going, well, he's fantastic, and Chesney isn't going anywhere. But I'm not yet convinced by Ospina either.
No, I'm not, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he seems like a decent goalkeeper and a good signing, but I wouldn't have confidence that he's the number one in waiting, necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, if he gets a run of games and performs very well, then we can say, okay, well, let's give him a go. But as it stands, I think people just want to see a change because it's somebody different, that there's always this idea that the guy waiting is better than the guy who's not performing in the team. I think we've seen that perhaps with a couple of the forward players, and we might touch on that a little bit. There have been stories around Twitter last night, apparently John Jensen saying on Danish TV that there was a bit of an incident after the Southampton game and Chesney was given a fine. And obviously we can't corroborate those kind of stories, but apparently it comes from John Jensen being mates with Steve Bould. Now,
right, yeah.
Now, I mean, just throwing this out there, from time to time, you know, you might hear something from somebody associated with a club, for example. I might hear something, but you don't then, if it's your friend telling you this, go on national television and let it slip.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you? That's a bit weird.
It would be irresponsible, certainly.
That font of information might then dry up. Unless this was all part of a Machiavellian PR plan from Steve Bould to get Chesney discredited. Yeah. I don't know.
He's ringing all the Johns. I don't know. I mean, what would motivate that? I mean, just to give him a kind of a public dressing down so that, I don't know. I think it would be a strange. It would be a strange source to choose.
Mm.
You know, John Jensen to release that particular bomb. I don't know. I mean, look, there may well be something in this. I suspect that if there is, it's probably more minor than some of the inflated stories might suggest.
Yeah,
and also something that probably happens more frequently than people might imagine. You
of
know,
course.
Someone has a strop in the dressing room and gets a bit of a telling off. I think after the Southampton game, wasn't Arsene Wenger asked about Wojciech Szczesny and said, I don't want to talk about him today.
Did he?
I think so.
Right.
Which suggests that, you know, there may have been some irritation there about something or other. It'll be interesting to see if more comes out on this. On the subject of Szczesny's character, I do think he is quite a cocky guy. But I think, is that not integral to being a good goalkeeper to a certain extent? You know, you look at Jens Lehmann and he was, to my mind, a very good goalkeeper and his batshit mental, you know, and thought he was pretty much the bee's knees. Even David Seaman, you know, seems like quite a gentle character, but let's not forget he signed his name Safe Hands and wrote in his book that he was better than Schmeichel. You know, these are guys who, because of the nature of the position, whereby you're under so much pressure and whereby you will make errors, need a certain robustness to survive, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think maybe that old adage about all the best goalkeepers are mental is perhaps a bit wrong, but you know, I never really had any issue with Chesney's self-confidence, because what you don't want is a goalkeeper who, the minute he makes a mistake, goes into a shell or freaks out by it. You know, we saw that perhaps with Manuel Almunia, who was a guy whose self-confidence was close to non-existent, I would say.
Mm.
You know, that when things went wrong for him, he looked haunted. He looked aghast, like he wanted the ground to open up and swallow him. And while you want your goalkeeper to learn from their mistakes, clearly it's not a case of, oh, well, I made a mistake, fuck it. I think Chesney's more of a guy who's like, okay, I made a mistake, but I'm not going to let that freak me out. That would be my thinking.
If you've got that kind of player who's got that kind of, mental strength, do you need to curb that and coax more out of it by having a particular type of coaching style, maybe?
I don't know, but I mean, I think you've got to bear in mind that he is still only 24. He's still young. You know, we expect these guys to behave like, I don't know, like mature, experienced people. And they're not always fully mature, you know? So perhaps there's a little understanding needed there as well, that maybe when, you know, if you think in 3 or 4 years' time, Chesney's going to be 28, that's still nothing in the life of a goalkeeper. And maybe then you've got a fully mature guy who can look back and go, actually, maybe some of the stuff that I did or the way that I behaved or the way I reacted, you know, in certain situations wasn't great, but look, here I am. I just wonder if it's another storm in a teacup kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so for me, are we back in at the weekend?
Same.
And I think that is probably the right call on balance. Okay, let's talk about another player other than Ospina who had a chance to impress. This is from John Ware, 1986, and he asks, after Hull, has Joel Campbell blown his chance, or has he given Mr. Wenger something to think about?
Good question. I had one as well about whether Campbell was given a chance yesterday or just whether it was lack of options that meant he had to play. I think there's been a tendency to overplay the talent of Joel Campbell based on one or two games, exacerbated by frustration at certain other players or certain results where things haven't gone quite right and he hasn't been given a chance. And, you know, I have to really wonder why, with 15, 20 minutes to go against Southampton, when we're 2-0 down, we need a goal, why was there such reluctance from Arsene Wenger to play him? To throw him on, because of what, you know, what have you got to lose? Only 3 points, which you're losing anyway, so why not give him a go? So I do wonder why the manager has been reluctant, and I think we saw to a certain extent some of the reasons why against Hull. The movement was fantastic, the little give and go with Alexis to make that chance.
Yeah, that was great.
After 5 minutes, but the finish was poor. There was another one that fell to him on the edge of the box. The finish was poor. Like, dragged it well wide. He should have at least hit the target from there. I think some of his... I think he looks vaguely out of his depth at times when we have the ball, that his movement around other players isn't particularly good. But he worked hard, and he really did put in a shift. But, you know, I think overall, there's probably a reason why he spent most of the season on the bench. And I don't know that he looks like a guy who's going to get you goals. Does he? I mean, if you're really looking for a goal in a game and you're throwing on Joel Campbell, do you feel confident? You know, even if I just said what I said about Southampton, you know, the other option that day was Chuba Akpom, and he got on for 6 minutes. So the manager's going to put on a 19-year-old for 6 minutes rather than give Joel Campbell 15 or 20. I think that tells us maybe how the manager views him.
Yeah, I mean, I was convinced, to be honest, that he was headed for an exit in January. I thought Podolski would go, and I thought Campbell would be the other one to go. But it seems that the fact that Podolski's gone and that Yaya Sanogo looks like he might leave on loan has kind of granted him almost a stay of execution, isn't it? I mean, I feel like he will be kept around because we need the numbers, but I'm not sure. I can't really foresee a circumstance under which he comes close to being a starter at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Can you?
No. Only a huge injury crisis.
Yeah. Like I sort of feel like that's beyond the limit of his potential, to be honest with you. I feel like the best he can hope for is kind of what happened yesterday, a run out in a cup game or a few minutes off the bench here and there. And so the question of does Joel Campbell have a future at Arsenal, I think really comes down to his own personal ambition. If he's happy to play that kind of role in the squad, then we've got a use for those players, I think. You know, that's it's great to have that kind of depth and to have international players, you know, in those positions. But in terms of is he ever going to make the breakthrough and make it in terms of being someone who's on the team sheet week in, week out, I think that is very, very hard to see happening.
Yeah. Well,
I'd say maybe impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that leads on to this question from Right Said Arsene, at Air Vic Con Cray. And he says, I'm not against Podolski leaving on loan, and talks of Sonogo going too, but won't that make us a bit short up front? Do you think that with those players going out, with Podolski now at Inter Milan, with Sonogo probably going somewhere on loan, manager wants him to go somewhere in the Premier League, assuming...
Desperately hoping someone who's seen him play will take him.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a bit mean, but, you know, then, of course, the fringe element of Joel Campbell... Does that then leave us short up front, or can we rely on Welbeck, Giroud, Alexis, Walcott coming back, and then players like Rositzky and Oxlade-Chamberlain, and maybe even Serge Gnabry when he comes back to provide a bit of depth in the wide positions?
Yeah, and also you've got to bear in mind Mesut Ozil's coming back, so that suggests one of he or Santi Cazorla could be pushed into those wide positions. I think we've got plenty of options. Even losing those two, I think we've probably... still got enough. If you think in most games, I think one of Ozil or Cazorla will probably end up playing from the left side when we've got everyone available. That leaves you with two from Giroud, Alexis, Walcott, Welbeck, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Campbell, Gnabry, even potentially Tchouaméni. Mm. I still think that's enough, personally. I'm not overly worried about it. I mean, I'm touching all the available wooden objects in my house because saying this is sure to spark an injury crisis. You know, first they came for the defenders, then they came for the midfielders.
Yeah.
The strikers are surely next. I did not speak out because I was not a defender, but blah, blah, blah. But I think, I do think there's a horrible sense, you know, Welbeck and Giroud have been out over Christmas. But fingers crossed, we should have enough, I think. What do you think?
I can't see us signing any forwards.
No, I don't think he's making room for anyone.
No, I think the one he's making room for is Walcott.
Yeah.
That's what I think with the Podolski loan. I think he's looked at Welbeck, who can play left, Alexis, who can play left, and he wants to make room for Walcott on the right-hand side.
Do you think Campbell is a factor in his Podolski thinking? Do you think he's thought, right, I've got to give this guy some games if I'm going to keep him here. In order to do that, I need to shift one out.
No, I don't think he would think of it like that. I think what he looks at, perhaps with Campbell, is that, well, Podolski was a fringe player, basically. And he sits on the bench for the most part and comes on for 8 minutes. And Campbell, yeah, he can do that job on the bench. That's kind of what I think. I don't think the manager has taken into account Podolski's ability to get you a goal from the bench, to be honest. Because he's looking for the players that he's got on the pitch to be able to do that. So, yeah, that's okay. What I think.
Is it your question?
No, I just kind of shoehorned one in
okay.
You see.
Okay, well, let's have another one. All right, well, this is a good one. We need to do this one. This is from Sean Haynes, who is at Haynes Sean, confusingly.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, just like last summer, what are both of your net/gross predictions for this transfer period?
for January?
Yeah.
Right, so a net and a gross. Okay, gross would suggest that we're going to sell somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we got sort of 1.5 million, didn't we, for Podolski. Does that count?
I don't think so, because it's a loan. We won't do that. So... can I see us actually selling a player? Let me just have a look at the squad here while we're doing this.
Okay, while you do, I don't think we will. I can't really see an area where we're so replete with options that we can afford.
No, I agree. Having looked at that, I don't see us selling anyone. So,
so how much do you think we'll spend?
How much do I think we'll spend? This is a good question. I don't know if we will.
Is that because you're thinking we might do a loan?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's something at least.
But, there's a part of me that looks at our squad and says, it's fucking blindingly obvious to everybody who's looking at this squad that we need players in January. And we've been saying this since August. But at at the same time, I'm going on stuff that's happened in the past, and I'm not hugely confident that we'll buy them, because he just has this thing, doesn't he, where he won't buy a player simply for the sake of buying a player.
I kind of think, my feeling is, Inter Milan have shown us that if you want to get something done fast, it can be done. I think if we knew what we were going to do and who we were going to buy, we would have been more active already. There was a story that came out of France. We were linked with a Saint-Étienne centre-back whose name escapes me.
Loic Perrin.
This is the one. And the owner, I believe, or chief exec or something of Saint-Étienne, which is a club where Arsene Wenger has good links, actually, because we used to have a little academy sort of link with them.
Yeah.
Came out and said, it's not even certain that Arsenal will buy a centre-back this window, let alone Loic Perrin. They have four or five targets that they're waiting to see if one of them becomes available. I find that highly credible.
Yes, I too, despite the fact it's usually like frustrating to the point where you want to hit your head off the wall. Thankfully, I've got little soundproof things on my wall here so I can whack my head off the wall without doing myself much damage.
Oh, that's good. I don't, but...
Not your beautiful face.
My face, my Jimmy Bullard face. I find that credible, not only because of the source, but also because of how we operate. And I think we are in a position where we are going to be reactive in the January transfer window, it seems. We're not being proactive. We're not like, right, we want Mats Hummels, let's go and knock on the door and throw money at the problem. We're like, well, let's, as Arsene Wenger says, let's see what comes up.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very dangerous strategy. I notice on my Twitter timeline, as we've been talking, Sam Allardyce saying Winston Reid has no future at West Ham. Whether that influences anything at all, who knows? But I think that, I think we won't push for anything. It'll be a question of if someone who we've got a long-term interest in comes onto the market, which is quite a strange thing in itself, because, you can push someone onto the market by bidding the right amount, but
yeah,
that's not the way we tend to do things.
All right, so... What's your net and gross then?
Well, they'll be the same, because like you, I don't think anyone will be sold for money. I think there'll be a couple of loans. I would say it's not going to be... I'd be surprised if it's more than about £6 million, I think.
Right.
I think we might spend that on a squad player. But it wouldn't blow my mind. I'll go with that as my guess, but it wouldn't blow my mind if there was a deadline day loan signing. I'm looking at you, Kim.
All right, well, look, I'm going for nobody going out. And just for shits and giggles, I'm going to go for 12 million.
Okay.
And we're going to spend it on some kind of midfield player. Like Sissoko.
Yeah, that is the one rumour that I keep hearing that I think I can totally see Arsene Wenger do that.
Because we need a centre-half.
Yeah.
Let's buy a kind
attacking
of attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
The ghost of Arshavin past.
Exactly. It feels almost inevitable. Very good player. Not remotely what we need, but there you go.
Yeah. All right. Okay, here's one from Finn Arse, at Finn underscore Arse. And he wants to know, should Wenger keep Koch as Flamini's stunt/replacement and prioritise searching a replacement for Arteta? Now, I know we've been accused of being quite down on Coquelin.
Yeah, we have.
But in fairness to him, and I think under regular circumstances, he would still be on loan at Charlton. But given that the circumstances are not regular and not usual, and we've been forced into using him, he's been good.
We're now forced into praising him. Yes, he's been very good. He's played very well, especially for Francis Coquelin. I think he's performed admirably. Arsene Wenger described him as the positive of the Christmas period. I think that might be slightly overstating it, but he's certainly a positive. And here's the thing. As good as he's been, I am loath to celebrate that too much because I feel like it will prove impediment to an upgrade. You know, I feel like if Arsene Wenger decides that Coquelin's doing well, that's the checkbook. That sound you can hear is the checkbook slamming shut.
If only there was some way we could describe an old player coming back and having an impact on the team. Like right. Some kind of new
novel arrival. Yeah. novel acquisition. Yes, that is genuinely my worry. That's absurd that it's come to that. But when a player does well, there's part of me that goes, oh, no.
But, I mean, what more can you ask for? A player given a chance, steps up, takes it, gets stuck in, uses the ball pretty well, doesn't just point at tackles, makes the tackles.
Look, I think for me, he's probably jumped Flamini in the pecking order, which is a big call to make given their relative experience. I think he probably has jumped Flamini. I think he might be a better player at present. For me, my only frustration is that I think that there's a better player still that we need for our team. And just that if we have this number of defensive midfielders, I can't see Arsene adding another one. Not that I was ever confident he would, but I don't know. I think he's done very well. I wouldn't knock that aspect. So I like that he's a good tackler. I think his passing, as you say, is better than he's been given credit for. What do you think in relation to Flamini? Do you think you might be giving him a run for his money?
Yeah, certainly, because I think what he's shown is all the attributes that Flamini supposedly has and a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, he has got stuck in and he's got a little bit of edge to him. And we saw that late tackle where he kind of jumped theatrically into the air and was maybe
was
a little bit
crazy,
lucky.
I thought.
He was a little bit lucky to get away with that. But I remember, was it against Everton, perhaps? Thierry Henry doing something very similar.
Wing.
Yeah, he leaped from miles out. It was almost like a cartoon. It was so ludicrous, the leap, and that was the one with Coquelin yesterday. And I have a feeling that if that had been in the Premier League, he would have been sent off. I thought the referee yesterday was quite lenient, actually, a couple of times.
Very much so, yeah.
Which in a way was refreshing, rather than every tiny little thing resulting in a yellow card and having an impact on the game. But look, I think if you're gonna pick a team based on how well players are playing. You know, I know you have to take experience and everything else into account, but, you know, I don't think if Flamini's back that he has done enough this season to suggest he should come straight back in ahead of Coquelin. And yeah, I never thought I'd be saying that because, you know, I think I'm not even sure that Arsene Wenger thought he would ever be in this position, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
So all we can do is doff our caps to the cock.
Indeed.
And well done to him.
Yeah, he's certainly playing well. I think that's probably beyond dispute, really. Got time for a quick one?
Yeah, quickie, go on.
Okay, this is from Atul Bardwaj 94, and he asks, quite a simple question. Would you like to make any comments about the delivery for Per Mertesacker's goal?
Yes.
It was unbelievable.
Imagine, now, it's hard to get your head around it. Imagine whipping in a ball with pace.
Yep.
At a great trajectory.
Mm.
Into a dangerous area where the keeper isn't sure whether he can come, where defenders are struggling to get there. More, please. More.
It was astonishing to watch.
And you know what made it even more frustrating was, remember late on in the first half, we had a free kick just outside the box, right by the byline.
Yeah.
And we decided to play some kind of terrible short pass and ruined it. Having just witnessed what a good delivery into the box can do, that we completely and utterly decided never to do it again throughout the game, that was a bit crazy.
Maybe they just knew that was sort of our one for the season.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, the laws of probability. Let's not bother with corners anymore.
You don't score two holes in one in a row.
Exactly. But no, more of that. And Per Mertesacker was at the far post, not the near post. Dramatic transformation of our corner tactics into something that worked.
Yes, that's
long
the
may
thing.
It continue.
That is the thing. Okay, I have one more question, if you want to hang on. And it's not a particularly pleasant one. It comes from Marwen Ben Mustafa. Mm-hmm. He's at @indigo_light.
Lovely Twitter handle.
And he says, would you rather have Phil Dowd's body and your own face for a year or Dowd's face for 6 months?
I'm going to go with Phil Dowd's body because there have been points in the past where I've nearly had it anyway. 2012 was a dark time, full of biscuits.
You've got the clothes to fit.
Exactly. Genuinely, like that, I'm still wearing them, just with like multiple belts. So I'm going to go for Phil Dowd's face. I think I'm hardy enough to survive it for his body. Rather, I don't think as much as there are inadequacies with my face. I think it's sort of too linked to my identity. The horror of walking down the street and people thinking I was Phil Dowd, a trimmer Phil Dowd, is something I don't think I could live with. Mm. What about you?
Oh, I go for the body as well, for sure. Yeah. Because as dumpy and slow as it is, and I'm well on board with the whole slow thing, by the way, you could at least change it by exercising, by eating well.
Or abuse it. I mean, it's not yours, it's Phil Dowd.
You could get tattoo of all kinds of stuff all over the body, and then hand it back to him after 6 months, and he'd be like, "Oh, what the fuck? Why is there a tattoo of Mike Riley doing it with a badger on my back? I'm never going to be able to go topless at the referee's Christmas party again."
Wow, there's quite the image.
Yes,
David Ellery still there, kicking back.
Yeah,
in a mankini.
I think, David Ellery.
On that note,
I think we should
end
probably
it there.
It's Monday. Just the podcast. The rest we can save for another day. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. We'll have the Arsecast back for you on Friday, seeing as the days of the week are back to normal now this time of the year. And we'll be back on next week's Arsecast Extra.
Bye bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.